Welcome to the Feud Podcast. If you want to email us, you can send us an email at futilepodcast@gmail.com. You can visit our website, grantseed.com/futilepodcast.com. You know, the www. I don't think you have to say that anymore. Like, everyone just knows. Tonight, we are going to talk about a little film I like to call Righteous Kill, directed by your buddy John Avnet. Advent. Day of the Advent? No? Avnet. Who's, everyone knows, is the director, co-producer of the, what's that show, The Practice Wife on USA? The Practice Wife.
Right.
With Deborah Messing.
See, he's got to make enough money doing other jobs so that he can do these passion projects.
These passion projects. Low-budget indie projects that are, that he puts, like, I mean...
You get some of the biggest actors alive, and you throw them in these things that are basically CSI cold case schlock, where it's similar to 88 Minutes in that it has the constant flashbacks to... And this one, even more so than 88 Minutes, introduced characters to have them killed off seconds later, just like that. Like,
yeah.
There's no... Like foreshadowing.
There's a clear laundry list of people.
Yeah.
So do you want to do the honors here and give us a breakdown? This is for those of you that are fans of Heat, you got to check this movie out. It's not going to ruin the experience of Heat for you in any fashion. It's not going to be like, hey, Al Pacino and Robert De Niro are awesome, like, actors and gritty crime movies and things like that. And like, when they're given good material, they take a bite out of it. And that scene at the coffee shop, there's multiple scenes of De Niro and Pacino in a coffee shop in this, is all I'm going to say. So, like, let's say Heat is a 10 for you as a movie.
Right.
And there's one scene of them at a coffee shop together. Righteous Kill by, you know, just basically by the numbers here. I'm just being scientific about this. Now, I'm sure there's subjectivity, but I'm going to be purely objective. Having about 6 or 7 coffee shop scenes with De Niro and Pacino in them together, probably about 4 or 5 times what Heat is in terms of coffee shop scenes.
Well, in this, it wasn't even, they didn't up it a notch. It wasn't really a coffee shop. It was like a
country western bar in the middle of New York and like Brooklyn.
They were in a bar a couple times. Then they were also in a... It looked like a fine Italian dining place at one point. Like, they just kind of randomly... And they also did the thing where they would... they're in the office sometimes, and other times they're in bars, and other times they're in diners, and other times they're, you know? And then they have a scene where they're sitting there with Donnie Wahlberg and
Johnny Legg.
Yeah.
Johnny Legs.
And they're sitting there together talking about who could possibly be the killer. And it's in, like, this high-rise penthouse apartment.
It's at the crime scene.
Why were they back at the crime scene?
No, they had just walked in, I think.
No.
Oh, that's right. They kind of went back to check it out.
It looked like the same place, right?
Yeah, they were.
It was that place where the rapist.
They were right where they dropped AMH. And
where the rapist was.
Yeah.
Like, where there was a rapist that was killed. They all go in and check it out. And then, like, a couple weeks later, they go back for a little, you know, they decide, hey, let's get together somewhere and figure out who's doing these killings.
I got it. The rapist place.
Let's go to the rapist place. It's open. We just gotta, you know, cut the police lines.
Let's go to where they dropped AMH.
Yeah. So, the movie is about...
It's a morality play about the thin blue line between the cop and the criminal.
Two cops with no motivation whatsoever are...
They've been on the job for over 30 years.
Yeah.
Back in my time, you put on a hard hat and a hammer, or you got a badge and a gun.
Those are your two options.
Your two options. If you were Italian, I guess you'd sell oranges or get into waste management.
Right. One of those two.
Or construction. Building materials, mostly.
And then the plot starts by... I don't even remember how it began.
It begins
really?
Kind of...
I don't
of,
think
it,
this movie it, ever it, began. It's always been.
It's sort of a faux in medias res kind of beginning. Well, no, I guess it's a proper in medias res beginning.
It starts with De Niro, and this is not a spoiler because it's in the trailers, but De Niro basically admitting to the crimes that happen.
I'm going to take you down with me.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And then it flashes back. The whole movie is just flashbacks. And the main movie is a flashback from the end. And then in between that, there are multiple other flashbacks. There might have even been some flashbacks inside those. It's like one of those Russian doll things.
Yeah, the Russian doll.
The babushka or whatever. Flashbacks. And then I think we're introduced by Rob Dyrdek. How do you pronounce the last name? From Robin Big on MTV.
Oh, that guy, yeah.
He's an awesome skateboarding pimp. Which is the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
He's introduced in a great way, too.
It just shows a guy skateboarding, there's some rap music, and he's wearing some bright clothes, like a yellow shirt and a blue hat. And he does a nice little, like, pop shove it off a...
He pop locks and drops it.
No. It was like a pop shove it off a... like a loading dock.
Off an ollie board or something.
And then he lands on the ground, and...
this woman's getting... This is in an alley, right?
There's an alley, and he skateboards and does this trick in the alley, and then inches away, where it reveals there's a cab and a woman about to get in it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is preposterous.
A blonde Russian woman.
Yeah. And he's like, "Where are you going, bitch? I want my money. Get back out there on the streets." At that point, we know that he's a...
It's all very kind of quick. Yeah. And then
she's like, "Oh, no." So she runs away to go get him some money. And then he skates about 2 more feet and then gets shot in the head.
Yeah, with a silencer. And then the guy leaves the gun.
And a poem.
Takes the cannolis and leaves the poem. And the poem kind of drifts down.
Yeah.
Nice in slow motion.
Little white piece of paper.
Yeah.
So basically what happens is all these people who should be killed are getting killed.
Righteously
killed. And someone's leaving poems and the guns at the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole bunch of lame subplots with Curtis 50 Cent Jackson.
Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, who gets third billing.
Yeah. Whatever. That's to try to get people from the urban areas to watch.
Possibly.
And basically the movie is about them, this big, long, complicated mystery about who's doing these killings, these righteous killings. And all the evidence leads to De Niro. Even though... he's the main guy, and he's obviously...
Well, there's no real evidence. It's all within the cops, like, the internal politics and everything.
But there's no real evidence in cop movies. All cop movies, it's just hunches. Everyone works on hunches.
It's hunches.
So the evidence, by cop movie standards, is all leading to De Niro.
So there's a handful of hunches that Johnny Legs and...
And Donnie are
chasing after. And then Al's in there every now and again, yeah. just to kind of add like flavor. Al's like the spice of the dish.
Flavor in the stew.
Yes, indeed.
De Niro's the meat, and Al Pacino is the cumin.
Indeed, Al Pacino is quite the cumin. And Dennehy is like the flowery
the
mix
sprig of parsley that they put on top. And Dennehy looking older, a little not as beefy.
No, not quite, but still like mean.
He's basically
there
just to be a sounding board and someone who basically.
Reminds
them that, hey, you guys, the mayor, my ass.
You got it. He actually never mentions the mayor or his ass, I don't think.
But he does basically give that insinuation.
He's like, so you guys want to work today, or you going to play shuffleboard?
Yeah, they're going to take away your pensions, you know. Mm-hmm. They're going to take you, what about your 401k, you know. Mm-hmm. You got any bearer bonds? Like, he just keeps going, you know.
He talks about bearer bonds.
And
well, because he's got like some in Monte Carlo with Brian Benben, right?
And there's this thing, for no reason, Carla Gugino is the girl in De Niro's life who...
And she's got this whole S&M thing.
Yeah, she likes it rough.
She really does.
Like, that's her thing.
She's creepy. She's a bad girl.
Yeah. You know,
you licked your lips a little there when I said that.
I'm thinking about doing the pencil trick in a minute here. The way stuff comes about in this movie is so telegraphed.
It's telegraphed, it's ham-fisted, it's poorly covered from like a...
It really
like a, like an
me
editing
of
standpoint.
88 minutes, because there's things that happen where, like, they do the old like...
There's the old switcher.
Junior Hire made this trick. What you do is, you show someone, they look up and they go, "Oh, hey, it's you."
Uh-huh.
And then the person gets killed. Either that
from
or...
from the POV. Yeah. So you don't know who it is. That was real clever.
Right. In the 88 minutes, for instance, you know by about halfway through the movie that... the killer for sure is a girl, because they've already made perfectly clear that his assistant is a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows her in some flashback scene making out with some girl who's and you don't hear it, but she's like, "Oh, I can show you those secret files," or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's obvious, you know.
We're not talking about 80 minutes,
but it's the same thing, and it.
Well, I would say that, like, you actually have to look at the performances, maybe, to know that it's Pacino. There's no, like, direct evidence early on, at least, that it's him.
It's super...
I'm sorry, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, the killer is Pacino the whole time.
The whole time it was Pacino.
Because
and if you don't get it by the time...
They do the thing where De Niro gets backstory, Pacino gets none. That's the first obvious thing, and that's very clear by 10 minutes in. That to me, it was like... It was about the same time that I figure out in... the sixth sense that Bruce Willis is spoiler dead was about 10 minutes in. Actually, right after he gets shot, and then actually the bag comes and walking through the streets and stuff, I leaned over to Luke and I was like, he's dead, right? He's like, yeah. Because he had seen it like the day before.
Yeah.
So, it's that same sort of thing. Like, it's textbook filmmaking, I guess, in terms of the way you plot it.
Yes.
The execution is textbook terrible filmmaking.
It's pretty bad, and it's like
it's the most choppy, convoluted.
It's like a bad magician, really. Is what you've got with a film like this is you're trying to make a mystery, and anyone knows that you can artificially create a mystery, and most mysteries are that way in a story, in a television show. It's bait and switch. You show something, you don't show something. If you watched Carnival, if you watched all kinds of other shows, Lost, all those shows, it's the same sort of thing. You kind of are sitting around and they could just give you everything. And usually that's how it goes. There's finally just an exposition scene. Even the X-Files, you know, some guy talks for 10 minutes and explains the last three seasons and you're like, oh, okay, now I get it. And in this, it's like they'll do bad. I mean, like, some of the stuff that was in flashback form wasn't even his flashback. It was just like he needed to get that out. Like with Dennehy coming to him at the at the Little League thing and saying, look, you know, I'm putting you, what that means in English is that you're, you know, because it's always rougher with Dennehy than it needs
it
to
is,
be.
Yeah,
you know, he's not a tender man. If you know,
look, you worthless piece of shit.
If you know from the FX films the way he treated his old lady.
Actually, a really good exchange was with him and Pacino in the diner.
Yeah,
they're sitting there and like them together, that was pretty good because Dennehy's very forceful and Pacino's very forceful and sardonic.
But Pacino's very kind of like dodgy about
things. Yeah, but the way he does it is great. He's like, they start arguing and then he's like, they both start going, ah, blah, 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 blah. And then they sit there for a while and he's like, and Pacino starts making some like
tapping.
Bah, 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 bah. Then he's like, can I talk now? Then he's like, go ahead. Like, they're so gruff. And
but the way that started at the beginning was like when Pacino makes some joke and then he's just like, he just doesn't have time for it. He's like, look, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of your bullshit. You gotta
put time for your jokes.
This is the way this is gonna be.
Yeah. It seems like, I mean, if you want to make a movie like this, that's fine. But at least make the twist more realistic. Like, you have to at least give some red herrings to make you think that that Pacino couldn't have been it, and then you have some sort of loophole that made it possible.
Yeah.
Because once I was watching everyone, and like the way they film it, you can tell who's who. Like they do the little suspicious looks on people's faces and stuff like that. But you know, it's like watching Kiss the Girls. You know, the moment after the first scene you've seen Cary Elwes in that he's the killer, because they introduce everyone, and then it's like, oh, here's another semi-big name actor, and he's just kind of there. Like, oh, it's another detective.
You know, it's the old Law and Order thing. It's like when they go into the restaurant, and the guy that like runs the restaurant that they're investigating because they think that like his daughter maybe been involved, and it's like Chris Penn or something
like that.
RIP, IRL for Chris Penn.
RIP, he's what brand is now.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, hey, yeah, it's Chris Penn. Either he did it, or it's going to become a big court thing, and it's going to be some switch thing where it's like his daughter did it, but he's going to be
movie where everyone's a big name thing like this, or relatively big name.
Pretty much, yeah.
Then
even down to AMH.
Yeah, then it, you wouldn't just be able to know by that, but you do know that, you do know by watching it that, I don't know, just obvious by the performances and the way it's filmed, and like you said, there's this thing where they do the two. A psychologist is talking to them, the cop psychologist, and they do the split screen thing. And
if you're familiar with Samurai Jack, then you know might know what a split screen is. So this is what they're doing.
He does ask the same question both of them. De Niro answers very tersely. He doesn't want to deal with this. And Pacino's just all loose and laid back, and his answers are in contrasted to De Niro's. Like, the movie isn't about them together. Like, the movie really is about De Niro, so that makes it obvious that it's Pacino. You see, that's where the problem
pretty
is.
Pretty much, yeah. Because you're not telling a serial killer story. You're not
like Heat, for instance. It's not a mystery. It's not a whodunit or anything like that. But it pretty much equally follows them both. And I think even, like, De Niro a little more. Like, to the point where...
To a degree. And, I mean, and you've got Kilmer in it, too.
And it really is mainly about those two guys, but specifically about both of them. And then about the other people, like you said, Kilmer's story and all that stuff. And this is just basically a movie about De Niro. And then Pacino, who also shares top billing with him, is basically in every other scene, but he's not the focus of it. So it's so obvious that it's him.
To a degree. If it has to be the big name. I mean, sometimes these bad movies like this, because they don't need to have any kind of logic, they could just, like, I thought it could have been the woman for a while there. I was like, you know what, this, they could just twist this up and make it like it's just some weird thing, you know?
When they purposely make it obvious and not because of filmmaking cues, like, you plan much stuff like she loves violence and she's looking at all the kids' files and stuff.
Exactly.
That's too obvious. That's why I think what good filmmaking would have been, well, better, it could be good filmmaking no matter what they did, but... You know, you do something like that. Make Pacino look really guilty.
Mm-hmm. At some point, yeah.
Make him look really guilty. And then he actually is. And you're like, oh, he was. That's almost more surprising. Than no signs pointing at him the entire time.
No, it's not him.
He's the only person who didn't have any suspicion cast
on
him.
And he's jokey and he's whatever.
And he's hanging out with everyone in their investigations. I'll help you guys out.
Yeah,
how about that?
I just wanted to see the look on your faces.
Yeah, right.
And like how he just knew he was going to win $1,000.
Since we're going to full spoiler mode here, when he kills 50 Cent, he's got this little gun, you know. He stands behind him and shoots him in the head, and which blows him through a window.
It's awesome.
And he flies about 10 feet forward. Like,
dude, that was like a 50 Cent real doll right there.
It was, and that was from the Sam Raimi School of Killing Gene Hackman at the end of Quick and the Dead bullet gunshots, where Sharon Stone shoots him once in the heart. Which makes a big hole. That doesn't knock him over. And then he reaches for his gun again, and she shoots him a second time in the head, which flips him. His body flips, like his head is this fulcrum, and the rest of it, you know, like, woo, and then he falls to the ground.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Resetting the clocks, huh? Daylight savings time.
Yeah, I think that Avnet was watching that movie.
Probably.
Right before they filmed the scene. He's like, you know,
I think he was
doing?
Watching it while they were filming the scene.
Let's just not have the bullet go into his head and out the other end and blow the glass through. No, wait. Let's make it so that the bullet goes into his head and somehow his whole body is like pushed forward like it was...
Like he's wearing rocket boots or something.
Something like that, yeah.
He's got a
jetpack. He's on rollerblades and he's on ice.
And a jetpack.
And then a semi-truck ran into him.
And John Leguizamo's trying to start a chainsaw.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. The trailer... That movie actually looked interesting. It's got a whole lot of good actors in it.
Alfred Molina, I like him.
Molina, it had, what's his name?
Freddie Rodriguez.
El Rey. Yeah.
Who?
El Rey.
Who's El Rey?
Didn't you watch Planet Terror?
That's Eddie Rodriguez, right?
Freddie Rodriguez, yeah. El Rey.
That's his name. No, I haven't seen Planet Terror.
Oh, you gotta see that. It's good.
I'm gonna probably give it I wish there was something between C and C-. I really do, because I'm in that gray area now. I don't think it's worthy of a C-. I think I'll just give it a C. Because, like, to see it once was kind of fun. I mean, if nothing else, these are two big actors, and they're kind of having fun with it in a few places. And Pacino was funny.
Pacino was enjoyable. He really was
having a good time. And De Niro was almost too, kind of just being, like,
there were moments
De Niro.
When I thought everyone was in on the joke, because there were a few actually very funny lines. Like, and just kind of throwaway stuff, but Wahlberg says something pretty funny, like, where it's obvious he's just kind of a frustrated cop, and, like, they're guarding the Russian guy, and he's like, his name is... I forget what it was, Mugata or something like that. And he's like, Mugata. Like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like he's trying to describe it.
And everyone else, like there was a handful of the people in the audience, they seemed to be laughing about as much as we were during the movie. So it was kind of like everyone was having good time with this movie, which makes me think that,
it was enjoyable.
If I give a rating of a C, people aren't going to walk into it and think, no, this is awful. They're going to have a little fun with it.
I'll say it was slightly better as a movie than 88 Minutes. It was less enjoyable than that, though. And I'm lumping them together because it's basically like a continuation. It's literally the same exact filmmaking all the way through. The same exact filmmaking. Really awkward, like, rap music cues all the way through it. Like, anytime it shows a black person, hey, let's play some rap.
Yeah,
that's
they would show, like, they would push in some weird camera motion to, like, the club.
The people dancing,
yeah. The 404.
They had the shameless... Jim Jones was... Was that Jim Jones? I think it was Jim Jones, the first guy rapping.
The Kool-Aid guy?
Like, no, those were all like people who were, you know, 50
known.
Cents.
Yeah, of course.
The diplomats and stuff like that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, my other scenario was like ninja attack, but
you're right.
Because you have to have hands free.
Like a Bluetooth headset is going to save you there. you better be calling the other ninjas to come pull your ass out of the fire.
It's true.
Because I'm sorry, nobody wearing a Bluetooth headset is cool enough to fight off a ninja attack.
Dave and Joel's Fast Karate for the Gentlemen.
The podcast for people who don't like anime.
Or podcasts.
Find us online at daveandjoel.com.